What's going on, guys? We're back at the Real Bodybuilding Podcast. A lot of you are at home and don't have anything to do, so I got you guys an awesome guest. I'm with Mr. Terrence Ruffin. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Just enjoying being back home for a little while, yeah.
So where are you right now? Because I know you're in Toronto.
I'm back in Tampa. I got back last night. Yeah, right before you guys shut down the borders.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So were you going to be stuck in Canada?
I don't know how that was supposed to work, but I remember you guys saying, I thought it was something about today is like when they shut down everything.
Yeah.
I flew out last night and like the airport was empty, man. Like nobody was there.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. I just walked straight up to the, there was literally no lines at all.
Yeah. How was the plane? The plane was probably empty too.
Plane was pretty empty. It was a lot of connect. Like once I landed, there was a lot of, people trying to get back to Canada though.
Right. Let you sit in first class?
No, they didn't. I've never sat in first class. So.
They made you still sit in the back even though there was nobody there?
Yeah, it was probably maybe like that flight. I don't know how it was like one of those flights where there's two seats.
Okay.
It was huge. And then maybe like 20 people on the flight total.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. So what were you doing in Toronto?
I had a seminar, but that got canceled.
So what's going on? Everything's getting canceled. So what did you guys do? What did the promoter do? Did you still get paid? How did that work?
Yeah. So basically, man, like, honestly, like the promoter is another pro I met in Niagara Falls. And basically what happened was he didn't tell me until I landed in the city. Like, as soon as I landed, he said, I got some bad news.
Oh,
and
no.
Some good news. He said, the good news is you're getting paid. The bad news is the show was canceled. So what ended up happening, he paid me. But I said, just, you know, give me half. You know, you did still bring me out here. And, like, I can't do anything else while I'm here. But, you know, I didn't actually perform a service. So,
yeah.
That's what I ended up doing. And then I just enjoyed my time there. I know a couple people out there. I had some dinner. Some nice restaurants. I got some work done. I was really behind on work after the Arnold.
Yeah.
So I spent like, you know, every day, maybe 3-4 hours working with new clients and figuring out who they were and everything like that.
So I want to get into the business side of your career a little bit later. But first, I want to talk to you about what everybody else is talking about, which is the crazy physique you presented at the Arnold Classic. So I actually started following you like a little while ago, because I usually try and follow somebody for a little while before I get them on the podcast so I can kind of get to know who they are.
Okay.
And I've been wanting to get you on. And then after I saw you at the Arnold's, I'm like, okay, we got to talk about this. I don't know. And I met you at John Meadows' house a couple days before the show.
I actually saw, well, I don't know if we actually spoke then, but I did see you in 2018 at the seminar you guys put on in Toronto too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what... I'm kind of confused because I know you work with Joe Bennett, but I also know you work with John Meadows. So can you explain to people who's your coach and how it works?
Okay. Yo. So, I met Joe Bennett, man, I want to say maybe 3-4 years ago. He contacted me and was like, hey man, I like your physique, but I see some things you can kind of fix, you know, training wise. And, from that point on, I lived at the time up in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, which was about 6 hours away from Tampa. And I would come once a month, I would drive down once a month, you know, pay for a hotel. And
is that where Joe is? He's in Tampa?
Yeah, he's in Tampa. Yeah, he's the reason I moved here. Yeah,
okay.
So he just handles my training. I've been with him for, like I said, 3-4 years. And then I got with John 12 weeks out from Niagara Falls Pro Show, and he's been doing my nutrition and supplements and everything concerning that. Yeah.
So 12 weeks out from Niagara Falls. When was the Niagara Falls Pro Show?
Niagara Falls is in November, so we've been together since maybe July, August time frame.
Yeah, so it's relatively new.
You say what?
It's relatively new then.
Yeah. But I've known John, I mean, for a long time. He competed at Nationals with me in 2014. That's the first time I saw him, but I was still really new, and I didn't know anything. I saw him backstage, but I didn't know who he was at the time.
Yeah.
But he came down literally like a month later A guy at my gym brought him down, and that's where I actually met him and learned, like, oh, this dude is, like, a really smart guy. Yeah. So, you know, at that time, you know, I definitely couldn't afford him. I was 21, you know. And but what I did was, like, I you know, I valued his knowledge. I respect him. So, I bought what I could. I bought, you know, a couple ebooks from him. I paid for his website, you know. And at the time, I was a map order. And, you know, I always thought, I was like, well, for whatever reason, if I was not working with Matt, John would be the other guy. Yeah. I would want to work with. And, you know, some things happened, and I reached out to John to get back on track. Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a touchy subject, if you don't mind just getting into it. But so how long were you with Matt? If you want to tell people what happened, that's fine. I don't know if everybody knows.
I was with Matt January. I started with him January 2015. So about a month or so after I turned pro in 2014 in November, he had a couple pros. He had a couple, not pros, but a couple guys in that show. Santi was working with him at the time, and a guy named David Patericki. They were the middle and light heavy. Working with him, and they both got first, and they were like touted as like the most conditioned guys at that show. So, you know, I actually did look for a few other, like, I was working with a local guy at the time, and you know, he was awesome, but he even knew himself. He's like, man, I don't know that much. So, you know, if you ever do find someone that's a little bit more knowledgeable, definitely go, and you know, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
So you know, I guess it's okay to say now, but at the time, you know, I couldn't afford Matt either, but you know, one of his clients reached out to him and talked to him, and he actually gave me like a discounted rate, which was really nice.
Sure.
I worked with him as soon as I turned pro, basically. And last year he passed away, which was really tough. 2018 was my last show with him at the Olympia, and basically we both came to terms like, I needed to get bigger. Mm-hmm. So we took all of 2019, most of 2019 off. And during that time, he passed away, and it was really tough. I didn't really work with anybody in my off season after that. Yeah. I just kind of, you know, followed his plan and maybe added a few, you know, calories here and there when I needed to.
Yeah.
And when the time came, at the same time, I was going through a divorce too. Like, I literally, like, he passed away, and I moved out of my house with my ex-wife I was moving out the next day, which was really, it was really shitty. It was a really shitty time, but, you know, I talked to John. I told John, I said, hey, me and Matt had talked about doing, the Arnold, and, you know, I would love it if you would help me, you know, to do this. But I wanted to do a show first so you can kind of see my body and whatnot and see how everything works. So we did Niagara Falls. And that's kind of how that went about and how that happened. Yeah.
So explain to me, I'm not like super familiar with your whole history. So when did you turn pro? 2014 or 15?
2014. Yeah.
And then when you turned pro, did you turn pro as a bodybuilder or was there already classic then?
Nah, as a bodybuilder. Yeah, it was
fun. One sec. I want to just do something real quick.
All right.
So I'm going to share my screen with you because I've been doing this lately. Can you see it?
Yeah.
This isn't you though. All right. So is this you?
Yeah.
So what is this? What show is this? This the Nationals?
Nationals championships in Miami. I was 21, 154 pounds. I was lightweight.
You were 154 pounds here?
Yeah.
You know what I find crazy? A lot of people, like when I was at John's with you and I showed people the scale of your physique at the Arnold's, which is this picture for those of you who are watching, they were blown away that you were only 177 pounds. And I'm actually shocked that this is only 154 pounds over here on the left. So it's just, it's pretty insane. It just goes to show like your proportions kind of make up for the lack of size or the lack of weight anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the crazy is only like, that's only like a 20 pound difference between those photos too. Santi, he likes to say I have like bird bones. I got like hollow bones. So, man,
So you turned pro at the Nationals as a bodybuilder and a lightweight bodybuilder.
Yeah, yeah.
So was your plan when you started? So explain to me before you started. Like, when did you start bodybuilding? How old were you?
I was 18. I started like preparing for my first show at 18 years old, and I did my first show at 19.
And was your plan all along, like, what was your goal when you started? Did you think you were going to be a flex wheeler? Did you think you were going to be a 212 guy? Like, what was your plan when you started?
So, my plan, like, honestly, I did my first show. I was basically just filling it out the first show. You know, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know anything about anything. Yeah. Yeah. And after my first competition, like, I really enjoyed the posing. I think there's a video on YouTube somewhere of my first routine somewhere. I know I have my second one up, but the first one's on there too. But I had no idea that I was going to turn pro. I was moving a lot slower. So basically the whole time, like I moved to Florida after I was in the military. I had just joined the military. So yeah. I make it to my first base and I meet up with this bodybuilding couple. And I told them, I was like, yeah, I was thinking about doing a show, but you know, I wanted to wait a year. I was like, I'm going to wait a whole nother year. And they're like, no, you're going to compete. You're going to compete in 3 months. And I'm like,
All right. Why? Were they certain you're going to do well?
I don't know the reasons why, but yeah, they just, you know how people are sometimes, like,
yeah.
And also they probably wanted to use me as marketing for something, you know, yeah. Transformation stuff. So, yeah. I ended up doing that show. I got second place in the teenager category. I didn't think that was that impressive considering I was like 19, you know, yeah. I was probably the oldest guy on that stage. And then, in the open class, I got last place. It was only five of us. I got fifth.
Yeah.
And, honestly, that really, really motivated me. Like after that, I honestly became like a recluse. I would just go to the gym. I would eat, I would come home, and I did that for a year. And I came back the next year and, I ended up winning my class as a lightweight. I was still a lightweight. But I had put on 10 pounds.
Yeah.
I was 145 that first year, 154 that next year.
So this is your 20 years old now.
I was 20 years old. Yeah, I was 20 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And I won the overall in the novice category. I beat a guy that was like 240 pounds. He was a big dude. But just because I was in good shape and my proportions and everything. So, but I ended up losing the overall to a good friend of mine. I was still friends. I just saw him at the Arnold.
Yeah.
But it was funny enough, Nick Trigilli was there. This is 2014. Yeah. He was working with some guy, you know, and he was just happened to be in town. And he was like, you should do nationals. And I was like, I was in my mind, I won't be ready to do a national show until I'm like 180 pounds.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm still not
100.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Goes to show how much weight matters.
Yeah, you're right. So
did you go on and do the nationals with his advice?
Yeah, so like he was coaching me. He said this too. He coached me for maybe like 1 or 2 months. He broke up with the girl that was in the area that I was living in, and he kind of fell off the face of the earth for a while.
Oh, okay.
And but I was like, you know what? My plan at the time was to do USAs, and I would have been 20 at USAs. I would have probably tied that age with Cody.
Yeah.
But I couldn't afford it, so I waited to nationals in my nationals, and that's when I ended up turning pro there. Yeah, wow. I didn't know how I would do. I had literally no idea. But
okay? Did you have a vision in your mind at that point of who you wanted to be, or are you still just competing for the hell of it?
I wanted to look like I always identified with guys that were around my height. So guys like Sean Ray, Lee Priest, were two of my, especially Sean Ray, and I still like his physique to this day.
Yeah.
So probably like I would have loved to look something like him, or even I was a big fan of Victor Richards.
Yeah,
if you know it.
Yeah, I know who Victor Richards is.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's
yeah.
Like you got to put on like another 40 pounds.
yeah.
So I mean, no. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
So I had a vision. I had a vision, and you know, I was. It's funny, like posing wise, I definitely had some people I really looked up to in that Kai Greene, Bob Paris, Muhammad Makhawi, all those guys definitely influenced me there too. So.
So. If your goal, so this is where my questions were leading. your goal is a Sean Ray, right? So Sean Ray at his best, probably 210 on stage, maybe less, maybe a little bit more. Is your goal still to be that guy? Or are you like, now that I'm crushing it in classic, I want to be the classic guy? Because I'm always confused by the classic guys. Not confused, that's the wrong thing, not wrong word. I always wonder what the classic guys think. Do they think I want to keep progressing? Or do they think now that they've opened up this class for me, this is what I'm all about?
I said, you know, I haven't had to think about that too much until just this year that yeah. I'm creeping up to this weight limit. And it's a tough decision. It's a very tough decision.
What is your weight limit for classic?
175.
Oh, so that's right. You and John were 177. I remember you had to lose 2 pounds.
Yeah. I weighed in at 174.8. Yeah.
So you basically you basically have to stop working out now.
I don't know. We didn't really suck down that hard though. Like, I mean, we didn't use any diuretics. We just didn't eat for maybe 6-7 hours and it dropped down.
I know, but dude, I don't know how you can't get more peeled. Like you can, I don't know how you could lose any more weight without like losing muscle.
That's true. Yeah. So basically, you know, like my thought process is right now, I definitely want to kind of stay in classic a little bit. Just for the fact of where I'm just now placed in like I'm really in a good spot now. Placing wise and placing wise is all that stuff's connected to like your career. So like I got invited to a very good event coming up soon. I can't say what, but you already know now. So
what event?
Just because it's, I can't say. They're gonna announce it. They're supposed to announce it this week.
I'm supposed to know what it is.
I mean, it's an invite show only. Invited.
You're talking about the one, the show that everybody's wanted to watch.
So I don't know who else is doing it, but I got the call. It would be crazy for me to move up at this point just because things are just starting to open up for me business-wise and everything. So, from a perspective of like what I like and what I want for my physique, I don't really care like what class I'm in. As long as I'm happy with my physique, I'm happy.
Yeah.
But the thing is I would obviously be in a 212. It would take me a while to be competitive just because I don't put on weight very quickly whatsoever. You know, 2014 till now, I only put on 20 pounds. That's 20 pounds.
Yeah, but honestly, like, okay, let's do this again. let's do this again. So this is you at one set. You can see my screen, right?
Yeah, I can see it.
So this is you at 177.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Or 175 or whatever it is. But like, I can only imagine. You know, I mean, I know everybody talks about weight and it's only 20 pounds, but like if you added 20 more pounds to this physique, you know, you don't need to be 212. You could be like 195 and it would be crazy. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, look at Sean Clarita. He's nowhere near 212. He's like, what, 175, 180. Yeah.
So I don't, I'm not trying to, obviously, I'm not trying to talk you into anything. I think it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what's really fascinating to me is, I don't think the classic was on the main stage last year at the Arnolds, was it?
No, it was at the expo. They did. They got on the main stage for the night.
For the finals.
Yeah.
I really feel like classic is jumped as far as like its popularity and the respect you guys get and all that. So I'm not saying you should move into bodybuilding because it's more glorified or anything like that. I'm just asking on a personal level, like when I train, my goal is to like build more muscle.
Of course.
I just wonder, do you feel like you're stuck now because you can't really get too much bigger, or, you know, what is like the 5-year plan?
I don't know. Like it is like, I haven't even talked to John or Joe about this situation too much yet. I mean, even with my leg training, it's really, really minimal now.
Yeah.
I do one working set of hack squats and two working sets on seated leg curl, two working sets on lying leg curl, and that's about it for a leg day for me, you know.
It's like a 20 minute workout.
You know, everything else is still pretty much the same, like training wise, I'm still training hard, everything else is pretty, and I still train legs hard, it's just very, very, very low volume, you know. I'm not quite to that point yet, but yes, it's a really weird thing for me to think about that, how my training is going to change if I decide to stay in this division. Yeah. I don't know how much more about it.
What was the secret to your, 20 pounds? I know 20 pounds might not sound like a lot to the average person that doesn't really understand how hard it is to build muscle tissue, but 20 pounds is a lot. So it took you how long to put on that 20 pounds? 6 years?
Oh, 6 years, yeah.
So it took you 6 years to put on 20 pounds, which is pretty normal. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that it does take that long. But what was the key is what I'm wondering. Because these guys out here that are listening are always wondering, how did Terrence go from that 154-pound guy to this dramatic, perfect physique that he has all of a sudden? Like, is it just – like, what was the main key points that you focused on for those 6 years?
So, honestly, man, like, I put on quite a bit of that 20 pounds in the past maybe 2-3 years. And honestly, I got to say it's mostly because of the changes I made to my training.
Really?
Yeah.
So not diet. You think it's training more that did it?
Yeah. I mean, I pushed myself pretty hard when I was younger. I mean, like, I ate more when I was, younger. Than I do now. I got super fat because of it. I probably shouldn't have ate that much, but I was pretty strict with everything, honestly, I think it's training, especially I've been putting on muscle like nonstop in the past two years. And that's basically when I started working with Joe a lot more. I didn't change anything with like supplements too much. The food was pretty similar. The biggest change I made was from, because like I said, I was a big fan of Kai Greene, and by the time I got to Kai, he had stopped preaching like the four, putting four plates onto a shoulder press. He was talking about doing 20, 30 reps and filling the muscle on curls or something,
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and then like I got nothing from that. From like my first year, so 2014, I turned pro. I was 154 pounds when I turned pro. I took 2015 off because at the time there's no classic. I was like, okay, I need to get bigger for 212. Yeah. And that was the goal, trying to put on muscle for 212. Then they announced classic. So 2016, I competed. And I won the Tampa Pro at 157 pounds. So so that's almost no gain muscle.
Yeah, yeah. Time, right? 3 pounds.
Yeah. But to say, since I started working with Joe, I put on about 8 pounds in a year and a half. And then before I actually moved here, I maybe put on 6 pounds in a year.
Yeah.
So a good amount of that weight is from the, recently.
Yeah.
Learning.
So what, okay. I'm sorry to interrupt. I know the guys listening are always interested in the nuts and bolts or the X's and O's of what it was. So when you say, my training is what did it, I believe you, but what exactly changed the most in your training?
Okay. So basically, I went from doing a different workout every day, every week, not tracking anything, doing typically higher reps or, some things, to now I log everything. I keep track of everything every week. I'm adding 5 pounds every week. I'm adding one rep or something. I've done the same program. I maybe had three different programs over the past 2-3 years, and they're not that different.
Okay, wait. I want to stop you for a second. So when you say that, I want to figure this out for myself, because maybe you can help me get bigger. So if... when you say you did the same program, you mean like, say, come chest day? Are you doing the same
chest workout? Exercises, yeah.
Yeah, you're doing the same exercises every week?
Mm-hmm.
Are they always in the same order, or are you moving them around?
They're pretty much in the same order. I think we move, like, so since I've been here and I started prep since, last year, November, for my chest day, I moved... I went from incline dumbbell bench to a Smith machine. And that's the only reason we changed it is because I kind of tweaked tweaked my my chest a little bit, and I wanted something a little more stable.
Yeah.
So that was really the one exercise we changed. So basically, like, the workouts go, we have something like our bread and butter movements and stuff we log. Let's say for chest day, the chest day I have now is a Smith machine incline bench, and then they I just like this Nautilus chest press.
Yeah.
And then, so those are my two main movements. I track those every week. Those stay the same for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then, actually, we do another one. We do a fly, which is always the same.
Okay.
And then we have, like, at the end of a workout, we kind of switch it up from week to week.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a pump, you know. Yeah. So, like, we may do, like, the last two sets of the flies. We may do a fly, dips and push-ups, you know, a tri-set or something like that. Or we may do a fly, then move over to, like, the Smith machine and do floor presses or something. You know, something, yeah.
So this is, like, it flies in the face of, like, what everybody's doing. Because a lot – and I really like what you're saying right now, because a lot of people think – well, every week's got to be different because you got to shock the muscle and you got to have different exercises and you got to have different this and different that.
Yeah.
And you're basically saying to me, you did the truest form of progressive overload that can be, because that's the truest form of it, is you did the same exercises and just increased your weight or increased your reps every week.
And yeah. It's not a new concept.
It's not new, but it's new nowadays this is like, if you talk to like somebody and they say Dorian Yates did the same workout for like his whole career.
Yeah.
And he just kept increasing the weight and he got bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's not a new concept, but nowadays it seems like a new concept because everybody's so interested in what's the newest exercise. How can I manufacture this machine and make it different? You know, I see guys doing like bicep curls on the fucking,
On the lion leg curl machine. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, why are you doing that? I mean, you don't have to do that. But so it's actually really refreshing to hear you tell people you built this 20 pounds on this perfect physique by doing the same shit and just loading up weight and reps. So, and it's cool because you're saying you have one exercise at the end that you guys kind of vary a little bit from workout to workout. And this is the same thing you followed for all your body parts?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing for everybody.
Same principle?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really crazy to hear you say that. You know, I've never had a logbook.
Really? I think the funny thing is my strongest body part is, you know, my legs. And I look back at what I did back in the day. For some reason, without consciously thinking about it, I always progress legs without even, you know, one of my favorite people was Tom Blass.
Yeah.
So I always did that, but I noticed with every other body part, I didn't really do that. I didn't really think about, let me add, you know, 5-10 pounds here.
For some
reason with my leg workouts, I just did it, you know.
And it shows because your legs are your best body part. So it's like, it's crazy. So, okay. So basically you're telling people the secret is there's no real secret. It's like log your shit, do the same stuff.
Yeah.
And make sure you're just getting better every week. Okay, so diet-wise, you said you used to eat way too much, and now you've tapered it down. So let's skip forward from the bad days and go to your last 2 years, because you said those were the years where you put on the most muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a diet? I mean, you could do a daily or in phases. I don't know how you do it, but what does a diet look like for you to put on that kind of muscle in the off season? Are you doing high fats? Are you doing high carbs? Like, we'll narrow it down a little bit.
My really low, actually, compared to most people.
Really?
Yeah. People, I've posted my diet maybe, you know, a few times over the years, and people are like, whoa, well, the fats are so low. Right now, my fats are like 40 grams.
Really?
They've never been very high. And, you know, I know people always say, you know, it can be hormonal issues because of your fats being low, but I've never had any issues. I mean, when I first got with Matt, he did try me with higher fats.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I just kind of got, it didn't really do anything for me. I don't think my body composition went kind of down.
Yeah.
But even since I got in with John, and John preaches, you know, keeping your fats at he keeps them pretty low too. So
no, but John's got me on like a lot of fats.
Really?
So I don't know. I always thought John was the fats guy. So
not it's my fat. I get so my fat. All my fats come from. I get 3 whole eggs and 3 ounces of steak in the morning, and then I have 2 other beef meals at about 6 ounces. So they all come from my protein sources.
Okay, yeah, so give me one meal just so I can. We're not going to go through your whole diet because that'd be boring as hell. But give me one. What does one meal in the off season look like for Terrence to put on 20 pounds?
Like, oh, what, man.
Just give me one average meal that you would eat.
Okay, so I can do my. I'll do two actually. My post workout got to 4 cups of cereal, 3 scoops of protein, and a bagel.
That sounds good though.
Yeah, it does. I was surprised John kept the cereal in, but he was like, yo, but yeah.
Did you keep it in when you were dieting too?
Yeah, I did cereal. Well, the only time I
someone's calling you?
Yeah, let me decline that. All right, there we go.
So he kept the cereal in during your diet?
Yeah, I was surprised. The only reason I ended up changing it because like near the end of prep, I was doing maybe 2 cups, and I'm like, I'm not getting – it's not enough. So I just switched to English muffins, and that was – I did that. That's obviously my biggest meal post-workout. Intra-workout, I do about 100 grams of carbs, and then pre-workout, I do about 80 grams of carbs. The fats are – I don't know, 3 whole eggs, 3 ounces of steak. You know,
Yeah. So yeah. That sounds like a pretty good diet. I mean, a lot of people, what are you doing with the cereal? Are you doing it with water or you just mix it with the protein? And
I do water and protein, yeah. Just mix the protein up and use that as milk.
I want to switch gears a little bit to family. I saw your mom with you at John's house.
Yeah.
And I also see your mom with you in your interviews. And it looks to me, how old are you, 26?
26, yeah.
Is your mom your greatest fan?
Yeah, she is. She's only missed 2 shows, and that's because one was like it was back to back. She's a teacher, so she only gets so much time off. So
yeah.
She missed 1 show, and she missed the Niagara Falls show. But she was like, because I kind of told her last minute, but she's pretty much been in every single show all the time. Always been my biggest fan. She actually took my first bodybuilding progress photos ever. It was pretty cool. I got into bodybuilding. I was in the military. Like I said, I came home before going to my first duty station or job.
Yeah.
And I told her, I was like, hey, mom, I want to be a bodybuilder. She's like, okay. And then I was like, can you take photos for me? He's like, all right.
So wait a minute. So that's something new I didn't know about. So you're in the military?
Yeah. I did 6 years in the Air Force, yeah.
In the Air Force?
Mm-hmm.
Did you fly jets?
No, I worked on aircraft equipment, yeah.
So
I was a different mechanic. Yeah.
You just fit. Well, how does that work? You just finish your 6 years and then you're allowed to leave, or like what happens?
Yeah. So you sign a contract. You can do a 4 or 6 year contract, and your day to day really depends on a couple of different things, like your job, the job you're doing, and then where you're located and who's your boss.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily, I got my job was really easy. I worked from 6:45 to like 3 p.m.
Yeah,
I got an hour lunch, and I just worked in a building. They would bring like, if anyone wants to look up this up, the equipment I worked on is called an AN/ALQ ECM 184 pod, or just type in 184 pod. Okay.
What is that? What is that?
It is a jamming system that attaches to the plane, the wing of the plane, and it jams like radar signals, missiles, other planes, anything radio frequency wise. Yeah. So my specialty was like radio frequency and electronics.
So what happened? Did you lose interest, or you just kind of want to move on to the next phase of your life? I got to tell you, from somebody from the outside listening, that sounds like a pretty cool gig.
it was pretty cool. So like, there's a couple of reasons. So one, that's not the job I wanted when I went in. I went in to do like a special forces job, and it was called TACP. I made it pretty far, but I just end up not making it through.
What is TACP? Is that like an Air Force version of like Navy SEALs?
So basically, I liked it because it's really open. So basically, we call in airstrikes, but we deploy with different branches of the military. So the job I had my duty station and everything. I was supposed to go to Killeen, Texas, And I was going to deploy with the armored tank division and call aspects to them. So, but you can even, some of the instructors there, I learned a little bit. Some of them work for the Secret Service. Some of them work with Rangers. Some of them, it really depends. So you can kind of take that as far as you want to take it. If you want to be a little bit more badass, you can go be a little bit more. So, I you know, it was probably one of the best experiences of my life, because after I went through that, I'm like, well, nothing else is nearly as difficult. You know, it really, like, going through it, it really sucks.
Does it suck as bad as the videos I see of, like, the Navy SEALs guys?
Oh, yeah. So, like, Navy SEALs is a whole nother level. But, yeah, definitely, it sucked pretty damn bad, I remember, like, they would wake you up 1 o'clock in the morning. You'd go on, like, a six-mile run to the beach. And then they would – once you get to the beach, that's when you started actually – they started, like, they call it smoking you, where you push-ups, sit-ups for, like, 2-3 hours, man. It was hard, especially, like, the hardest part for me was I was 125 pounds at the time.
Yeah.
And, like, they would do these ruck marches where you carry this backpack with a whole bunch of shit in it. It's really heavy. And then at certain points, it would get up to maybe 80 pounds. And I'm like, I'm this 5'4", 5'5", guy. And the taller guys, they would be, you know, you're really just supposed to walk. It's like a brisk walk. But I was so small and I'm not even a fast walker to begin with. So I had to jog to keep up with these guys. And it was crazy. Like, my body was real. Like, my body was more beat up then than it is now. Like, it would hurt to, like, stand up and just do lots of stuff. Yeah.
But you know what, though? That's got to, like, bodybuilding's got to be easy after something like that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I hate that. I mean, everyone.
No, but I mean.
Because people, I know it's hard for people. But I think a lot of times when you go through certain things, like, imagine if someone was homeless and, like, they were beat all their lives, then they go, it's just different levels and different, it's your perception of something, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing what you just did and then somebody saying, oh, let me put you through a leg workout. You're like, well, I kind of been through, like, way fucking more than that. It doesn't seem like, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, like you said, it's different levels. I mean, if you're carrying an 80-pound pack on your back and you weigh 125 pounds, it's like it's more than half your weight. And you're
It was awful.
So yeah, I mean, that's got to set you up for the hard work it takes. So I mean, I guess that's where I would say, or would you say, is that where your hard work, your ethic comes from?
I think it definitely helped out a lot. I would say that's probably one of the biggest things that gave me some mental fortitude. Definitely.
So you left the military, and on your way home you called your mom and you said, I want to be a bodybuilder.
So a little bit into that, like I said, I didn't end up making it through that. So I go to this new job. I go this, they call it tech school, so to learn about your new job. So I went there, and these kids were like, hey man, you should think of, you know, should try bodybuilding. And I had put on a good amount of weight in that time. So maybe in three to five months, I put on about 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And they was like, yeah, you should try out bodybuilding. And the cool thing was, I didn't know anything about it. So I went to the store and I picked up two magazines, and Dexter Jackson was on the cover of one of them. And Joel Thomas was on the cover of the other one. A to Z Nutrition, Joel was on that one. I think the one I got at Dexter was Muscular Development, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, this is cool. So what I did was after I got the magazine, I looked through it, and then I went to YouTube because I'm old. So, like, I literally, like, got the book first and then went to the internet.
Did you say you're old? You're 26.
I mean, like, old, not, like, old in age, but, like, I'm not, like, technology-wise, man. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Even though you're putting jamming systems on planes? That's pretty technology. That's like,
I guess. Oh yeah. It's weird.
I know,
like,
what you, I know.
Write something down than like type it in my phone.
You know? I know what you mean. I'm just fucking with you. So, so you go to YouTube.
Yeah. And I watched like the Miss Olympia, and literally, that was 2013, September, and I was like, this is what I want to do this. And that's when I said, I want to do it. And I did it maybe 6-7 months later. Yeah.
That's crazy, man. You know, it's the opposite of my story. Like, when I started, I remember seeing a bodybuilding magazine and thinking it was stupid. I'm like, I think Dory Nates was on the cover of the first magazine I saw. And I was like, that's too much, man. I don't want to, I was like 19 at the time, or 18 maybe. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to fucking look like that. So I used to buy Men's Health, believe it or not. And I would I know I'm ashamed to admit it now, but I used to buy Men's Health because I was fat when I was like 16, 17. So I used to buy Men's Health to learn how to get skinny, and I got skinny.
Okay.
And then I actually went to a show when I was 20, and the first person I saw was Dexter Jackson.
Yeah,
he took second at that show, and Marcus Rule won. Those were the first two bodybuilders I remember seeing.
Completely different.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, and I couldn't tell who was my favorite. I'm like, is that guy my favorite, or is the little guy my favorite? Because Dexter was only like, he was much smaller in 2000 than he is now.
Okay.
So, but when I saw them, and then it was a pro-am, a friend of mine competed at that show. And I was like, I think I could, I told my buddy, I'm like, I could fucking do this. And he bet me. He's like, no, you can't. He's like, I dare you to do it. So I did the same thing you did. I waited like, you didn't get to do it, but I waited a full year.
Okay.
And then I did my first show and I won. And that's when I got hooked. But you have the more normal story, which is you saw the magazine and you were hooked on it. So it went from there. What I want to ask you, are you an only child or no?
Pretty much the only child. I grew up by myself. I got one half brother that I connected with, but I grew up just me and my mom. Yeah.
Is that why she's your number one fan?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I'm blessed to have like a good mother too. So, you know, everything, you know, she did her best with everything.
It sounds like you and your mom are friends.
That was who was calling me. My mom, she was asking me, did I make it back from Toronto? Say,
oh, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. You know, so, I'm trying to do better. Like, I'm an introvert, and I'm really fine with being alone. But I know with me being the only child, you know, I need to stay connected with people and try. So I try to, you know, I love my mom, but sometimes I forget. Like, you know, I'm always working or something, and mm-hmm. I get really busy. So I really try to. So I do what I can to call her and you know, do stuff like that.
Stay in touch, yeah. So you mentioned really quickly, you kind of flew by it. You mentioned being married. You want to talk about that? You kind of just like stuck it in there and like kept going. So I
got
to ask.
Yeah, I got married young, man. I got married young. I got married at 21 years old.
What made you do that? You're in love, weren't you? You're like,
yeah, man. I'm a hopeless romantic. So we were married. I knew we were married for we're married for 5 years, but we got separated 4 years. And I knew her for seven, eight years. Yeah.
So you knew her for 7, 8 years before you got married, or
total. So total. I knew her three years before we. Yeah, 3 years before we got married.
And then you got married, and you were married for how long? 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
And then you got divorced last year or the year before?
Technically, we separated a year ago, but the divorce finalized in January this year. Yeah.
What's that like?
Oh, man, it was difficult. Yeah, we were going through a lot of it during, like, the Toronto Pro and stuff like that. Yeah, that was, you know, my cousin was talking to me. He's like, dude, I don't know how you did that show. And I'm like, well, you know. Compartmentalize, and, you know, you try to do what you can and, you know, focus on certain things. And we didn't get a divorce because of bodybuilding. So, you know, it's not because of that. So
that was my next question.
No, I'm pretty chill. I don't really have any issues.
So you're not,
the only thing I get sleep. I get tired. So I rest a lot more and I just sit. Well, but I don't get really angry or anything like that during prep.
So do you want to leave a contact information for all the women listening or?
No. Oh, man.
You probably got them knocking down your door now after the Arnolds, especially.
No comment. Yo.
There you go. So, okay. We haven't really discussed the most important thing, which is why I had you on. You went from where'd you place in Niagara Falls?
I won Niagara Falls for sure.
Did you really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I should do more research. Usually I just kind of I try and learn about people on the show. I should probably try and learn about them before, but so
you so won before that show though, I got ninth at the Olympia, which was And just I know that's good. People say you top 10, but I got 9th my first Olympia, and then the next year I got 6th. So I was like, okay, I'm moving up. And then the following year, I dropped back down to, you know, what I was like.
Okay, wait, back up a bit. So, what was it? You've done the Olympia twice?
3 times.
3 times. So your first time was 9th, second time was 6th, and then last year was the last time you did it?
I did it 16, 17, 18.
Where'd you place in 18?
9th again.
Okay, so you win Niagara Falls. I'm gonna say this, and I'm not sure if it's true, but it's not a huge deal for you because you have a bigger goal, right?
Yeah. It was, yeah.
So then, and I'm not trying to make you sound arrogant or anything, but I kind of know if you're already at the Olympia level, that's your ultimate goal, right? So then you go to the Arnolds. The Arnolds is, you know, it's just like the Olympia pretty much. I mean, minus a couple guys, you're looking at the same kind of stature of competitor.
Yeah.
Did you expect to be second place? Did you expect to win? Did you, like, what did you feel like you're going
to
do?
So, like, to be honest with you, there's a lot. This was honestly, like, the most important show I've ever done. And that's just because this was the last connection and last thing that me and Matt had, you know, going in. Yeah. And it meant a lot to me. This show meant a lot. And that's what I Niagara Falls was just, I actually had to do Niagara Falls to be able to do the Arnold. I didn't know that going in, but it worked out. I was feeling top 3 going into the show, and then we went to, you know, we got on stage, we did pre-judging, and I was feeling pretty confident that I might have won the show. You know, especially since, because I was worried more so about Steve and Alex. And when Steve showed up off, I was like, oh well, you know he's third now, so, you know, I felt pretty confident. But and, you know, I was a little disappointed, but honestly, the response I've gotten since the show it's been amazing. You know, just the people who've reached out to me, and I like Alex. We've hung out before. We've done guest posts in El Salvador together. He's a good guy, but just seeing the response that I got and versus what he got, it was just really cool to kind of see how the fans saw it and how different people saw it.
I know what the fans thought. Do you think you won?
I think it could have gone either way. I would have.
You would have picked you.
Looking at the photos, I was like, well, you know, obviously I had him a little bit in the lower legs. He was a little bit more separated, a little bit bigger up top. He's really wide and he's got a really small waist. But honestly thought too that in finals, I was a little bit better. And the posing routine I brought, I thought that would have played a part. But talking to the judges, they said they didn't really judge finals and the posing doesn't count. So,
but it's supposed to. But I don't understand that, because it's supposed to at the Arnolds.
Apparently, it's only for open bodybuilders.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
It does. It doesn't. Yeah. So, you know, that's life, I guess. So,
So, life. I want to just show the people that are watching. And again, sorry to those that are listening, but this was you, and is it Alex?
Yeah, Alex Cabanero.
So what do you see in this photo? This is a front double bicep. Is that your full pose? Are you ready, or is that?
No, I posted this because both our eyes are closed. I'm not sure what was going on or what. Yeah. But honestly, I think that he definitely has me in the arms and the upper body, but I think my legs, it's kind of opposites. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that. You know what? You're right. He's got a little bit more like his rib cage and lat insertion. His lats look a little thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of the same story from the back. I think I got him on the side chest.
Yeah. I don't see if there's some other photos of you guys here. I think that's the only one of the two of you.
Yeah, I think it's the only one I posted on there. But
So you're, what do you think? You know, sometimes it's good to be second place. And I've had a lot of second places in my career, because for some reason people love the underdog, especially if they think he won.
Yeah. And yeah,
I think a lot of people thought you won the show. I do see what you're talking about in the difference of the physiques, but your physique flowed so well. And I think the posing, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to me that the posing wouldn't be counted in a classic show, especially because especially in the classic show, the posing is everything. I mean, the way you present yourself is the reason it's classic. So what, when did you start practicing posing and things like that? And I don't mean for this show. I mean, like, how did you learn to pose so well? Cause you're a very good poser.
I never had a posing coach. No one, besides like the first couple of sessions I had with the first people I worked, the bodybuilders I worked with. But for the most part, everything I've done is just been trial and error. And you can, like, if you go back and look at some of my old routines, so I've been posing since, I love posing since I first started bodybuilding. Going into that, my first show, he was a top level super heavyweight at the time, a guy named John Blatts.
Okay.
He was helping me with my posing, and he was just doing the basic, routine, and then he helped me for like, he showed me some stuff, and then I went home and I just Googled it. And I think that's the issue a lot of kids have. They're so used to the internet, but they're not used to researching stuff.
They don't use it.
yeah, it's really weird. It's really weird. But I actually looked up posing routines. I'm like, okay. And somehow I ran across one of Kai's routines. I'm like, oh, you can do that on stage.
This is a great pose here. Again, I want to apologize again to those that are listening, but we're watching on YouTube Terrence's Arnold Classic posing routine. And this is a great pose. It's actually a transition pose, but right there, that's just stuff like that is really, really clean. Like your posing is very, very fluid.
So that's the thing. So like what I was going to say is like, when I first started, like they were entertaining routines, but it wasn't quite as fluid.
Yeah.
I hadn't quite put all the dots together yet.
Yeah.
And it just finally came together, I would say, in Toronto. And I'm like, I kind of made my own thing and made my own style. And it just took a while.
You know, it's funny. It's true. Now that I watch it, like when you watch people pose, like people have told me like I'm a good poser, but not like at this level, but I've taken pieces of other people's routines to kind of create my own. This looks very original. Like this kind of like really your own style.
Yeah, I don't like, back in the day, like I said, I had people I watched, Kai, Lila Brada. Kai and Lila Brada are my top two.
I see some Lila Brada in here. but you know what? A lot of people try and copy Lila Brada's routine and they don't do a good job of it.
That's the thing too. Like when I first started, I was trying to just be Kai Green.
Yeah.
And I tell people now, I'm like, you'll never be this. It's no point in trying to copy someone because you'll never be as good. You can take bits and pieces, like you said, to make your own thing. It's always better to be the first you than the second whoever.
Yeah. I mean, you can try and emulate people, but not when they're at Kai Green's level. Like his level of posing is.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to copy, especially because just the way he moves.
Yeah. He's very unique. And like, I can't move. I just can't move the way he moves. It is what it is. And I have no issues with that,
So now that you're famous, everybody's like touting how great you are. Dude, you're like the talk of bodybuilding right now. And I'm not talking about his classic. Because even bodybuilders, like, look, man, I'm a bodybuilder diehard through and through, but we can really appreciate like a good physique. So it's very impressive what you put together. I have one question though. Why didn't you ever do men's physique? Not that I would want you to. I'm just asking.
It's funny, man. And I still have the same opinion. And it's literally the first person I talked to, the first coach I had. She's like, well, because I told you I wanted to wait a while to compete. She's like, why don't you do men's physique? And I'm like, well, that's not what I want to do, And that's how I feel about it. I'm like, well, even if you may not be the biggest at the time, if you wanted, if a person wants to do classic, just go for it, man. Or bodybuilding, just go for it. For one, you get the stage experience in the class you're doing, and I think it's way different from doing a men. Going on stage and doing men's physique stuff is doesn't really translate to what you're going to be doing as a bodybuilder. So you might as well get that practice in early.
Well, it's not only that. I feel like it's very, again, refreshing to hear somebody that says, I have a passion for this thing, and I just want to wait until I'm good enough at this thing. Because a lot of people that I run into have a passion for bodybuilding and like, well, I'm just going to do men's physique for now and then I'll do it later, which is also not wrong, but it's nice to hear somebody say, well, that was my passion and that's kind of what I wanted to go after. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is how you mentioned a couple times about being kind of broke coming up, which is normal for all of us when we're 20 and we're trying to bodybuild and it costs so much money to eat and all this other stuff. How has your situation changed? As you're like, are sponsors beating down your door now? Like, what's
no, everything's like, no, honestly, like literally. So like, it's really funny. So not funny, but it's unique. So like, yeah, I was broke growing up. You know, it was just my mom. I had a single mother, teacher, you know, not making a ton of money. So nothing, you know, growing up, it wasn't anything, you know, and then I leave the house at 17. I graduated earlier from high school, so that's cool. I did 3 years of high school. So I graduated at 17, went to the military.
Yeah.
For one, I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to pay for college, and I was kind of tired of school at the time. And so even then, I didn't have a lot of money being fresh in the military. And, you know, especially then I got into bodybuilding. And, you know, people always talk to me, like, I have very little empathy for a lot of people, just for the simple fact of about I've been through a lot of things that they go through and I found a way. So like for me to bodybuild, like I could barely afford the coach I had at the time was $100.
Yeah.
But you know, if I, you know, I would do odd jobs for them, you know, granted everyone can't do that, but
yeah.
You know, I would do stuff for them. I would, I didn't get a smartphone until the iPhone 5 was released. I didn't get an iPhone 5 either. But
your first iPhone.
Yeah. And that's why I'm kind of not super big into technology, because like I couldn't afford to get all the new stuff. Yeah. You know, I didn't buy new shoes. I didn't have a lot of this stuff, you know, that people buy now, and then they tell me they can't afford bodybuilding, they can't afford the diet or this or that. You know, I prioritized what I wanted to do, and I just did it. And Yeah, so back, you know, I got my first decent sponsor when I won my first pro show. So when you turn, you know, when you turn pro, yeah. Nothing really happens.
Yeah.
It's very little guidance. I barely knew how to apply for my pro card, honestly.
It's funny when you turn, everybody thinks when you turn pro, you're just like, the money is just like showering down. Really, really like zero happened. Like nothing happened.
And that's what I tell people. And then they don't get that. I'm like, people want to turn pro. And I'm like, well, I would rather have a good I tell them just focus on your physique first, because that's always the biggest thing. Because I remember, back in the day, like some of the guys, like they had the physique of a pro before they even turned pro, and they would get sponsorships like when they were one of those top level guys.
Yeah,
like I was on the very very tail end of it, but Nick Trigilli was, you know, he was one of those last guys that was a top level guy on the amateur ranks that had a decent sponsorship at the time, you know. That doesn't happen anymore, you know, really. Yeah. But so I got to see a little bit of that, but I think people they have the wrong goal. Like they want to get the pro card, but I'm like, you should just focus on building a good physique, and then that will come. And then you're more likely to do well at a pro show. You're more likely to get, you know, recognized by sponsors and stuff doing it that way. But you know, so I had my first sponsor, and that was pretty cool, having that money and the military money at the same time.
So it was a paid sponsorship.
It was a decent salary.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything like to live off of, but it was a good bonus. Yeah. It was a really good bonus. So that was my first time with a little bit of money.
Yeah.
I tell people what I was making 40,000 being in the service. And about 24 from the sponsorship I had at the time.
But a lot of people should know. I mean, it's good that you're open about it, because I am too. Like my first contract, I signed with MuscleTech the day I turned pro.
Okay.
$2,000 a month.
Yeah, I got $2,000. Yeah, yeah.
Like $2,000 a month is pretty standard for most guys who turn pro, unless you have some crazy following, then a company might pay you more. But I remember, I think even Chris Bumstead, and I don't know if he would be mad at me for repeating this, but I don't think he would, but even his was $2,000 when he started. And
really?
Okay. You know, Chris is Mr. Olympia now. So kind of everybody starts there. So, sorry, go on.
So that's what I was making back then. And I was a lot of money for me at the time. I was 22 at that time, 22.
Yeah, that's great.
So I kind of didn't know how to do stuff. I spent a little bit too much money. Yeah. And And I think a lot of people do that, you know.
I still do that.
Yeah.
I'm fucking 41. I still can't spend my money properly.
But I hit a hard time a little bit after that. And it was when all the shit was going on, like the divorce, Matt passing. I had just gotten in the military to do bodybuilding full time, and I had started coaching and posing services. And I wasn't making much of anything then. That was 2018.
Yeah.
And sponsorship. I wasn't doing great with sponsorships, and that's what I tell people too. Like, as a bodybuilder, it's not just about lifting weights anymore. It's about providing. You have to be several things to be a bodybuilder. You have to be a content creator, a video guy. You have to learn how to market yourself.
Yep.
You have to know all these things now.
Yeah.
That year, 2018, I was making maybe $25,000-$30,000 that year. So it dropped. It dropped a lot. Yeah.
Well, because you weren't in the military anymore.
Yeah. And then even my sponsorship went down because I wasn't putting enough content out for them. You know. So that was a mixture of them paying me a lot less and then me getting a few clients from posing and training and stuff. And I was really hard. but now I'm making almost, everything's good now. I'm really happy with where I'm in life. I'm making just under maybe six figures now.
Who's your sponsor now?
I work with Steel Supplements, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's good. Jason Hill's company.
Yeah.
And everything's really, really going, you know, halfway decent, you know. I'm a little nervous because things are finally not crazy in my life.
Yeah.
But, I can sit here and appreciate, you know, all the blessings I have that have come this year. Yeah.
Are you one of those people that, because I get like this sometimes, if things are quiet and things are good and everything's okay, you're like, something's not right. Something's bound to happen.
I didn't used to be that way. But man, this past year, yo, it was like this knock after knock after knock, man, yo. Yeah. When I first got that whole weekend, it was tough. So like, Matt passed away. I had to move out of that house, and I dumb stuff I did. Another more dumb stuff I did was me and my ex-wife had separate bank accounts, but I took on all the debt.
Oh, that's
yeah. So my credit was fucked up. So it was hard to get this place here.
So
it took me a while. So like the place was like, I was still trying to get this place, so my place wasn't even ready. Yeah. So I had to stay in a hotel. I literally just moved. I just bought a U-Haul, put all my shit in it, and went to the hotel down the street. Yeah. And I stayed there for maybe a week until this place, I got approved for this place.
Damn.
And,
you know, it's crazy. Yeah, man. They say when you go through the fire, there's a reward on the other side. And
Yeah.
It seems like you kind of been through it. And it's crazy that you're able to keep – I mean, are you telling me through all of that, most of the time you're able to keep your training and diet and everything on track?
It was pretty I think it was pretty decent. So the food was the hardest part for me.
Yeah.
But this is even before Matt had passed. I was going through divorce stuff. Matt, I had talked to him, and what we did was like I just ended up doing a lot more liquid foods. I did like three like meals with like just liquid like protein
like
and
shakes
carb.
Yeah,
and that helped out a lot. Training wise was pretty good. I mean, I was getting in there at least four times a week. I mean, it wasn't great, but I stayed. The thing that the thing that was the most effective was I didn't really do any supplements during most of that period. Just enough for like CRT or so, and even then that was inconsistent, which really surprised me on how I was able to make as much progress as I did, you know?
Yeah. Well, people are shocked. Sometimes they think they need a ton. They don't need a ton. Sometimes a little bit can go a long way.
I think it was a mixture. I think, just all this craziness, the only thing I could think of is just me just being in a surplus for an extended period of time was made the biggest difference to me putting on muscle.
Yeah.
So that's my financial situation now.
So I noticed you have a company called, is it Tribe? Is it the Tribe? Is that yours?
Yeah, Tribe. The Tribe is obviously taken, but a Tribe Aesthetic is like the actual, like.
The full name.
So
your clients? Is that your coaching company? Like, what is that?
No. It's a clothing line I started. It's doing pretty, I wanted to do it. And it's, again, going back with Matt, I had planned it out. Like, it's maybe the concept was maybe 3 years old, and I just kind of got busy and I kind of put on the back burner. And then when Matt passed, I just was like, yo, like, let me just kind of do this. And basically, it just reminded me of why I made it. Yeah. And it was like, we never, I mean, yeah, bodybuilding on stage by ourselves, but like, no one truly does anything, you know, great by themselves. There's always someone helping you, someone there, someone in your circle. So, yeah, I started that and it's going pretty good. Right now, I just have like direct to garment stuff. So, like, you know, I get next level of this or that and I print on it. But yeah. I'm finally to the point now where we're going to be making our first like custom made stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Really, really excited. I was debating on what I was going to start with because it's still not a big thing, but
yeah.
I'm going to start with just some tank tops that I want to do custom made. And yeah, so with so I have that. The coaching, I don't know why I made it all separate, but the coaching is Rough Nation, and then the posing is the Posing Academy.
Dude, didn't you learn anything about branding?
You can't. No,
you can't have three different companies.
Really? I just like. Oh,
no,
man.
You can. I just think it's
a lot.
It's good to have, like, if it was all Rough Nation, you know what really? I mean, or if it was all Tribe. Yeah, it's just my own.
I was thinking of doing more with the Tribe. At least I didn't want the clothing and the coaching to be tied together, but the posing and the clothing could be.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's pretty cool, man. So those are your businesses, coaching, posing, and your clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Is your passion in the clothing or is it all of it? You're passionate about all of them. It's usually when I've talked to other bodybuilders that are doing like this kind of all these entrepreneurial things, they have one facet that they're more interested in or more passionate about.
My most passionate is the coaching portion.
Yeah.
Just because I've been in a situation where I've had a bad coach. And not knowing the way I started doing my education was because I had a coach and he didn't know what he was doing. And I was like, I never want to be in a situation again.
Yeah.
So back then I went through the ISSA course. I got all the certs through the S6 certs. And then I'm going to school for exercise science. I didn't finish the degree, but I got most of it done. And then, I just never. And then, you know, I did a mentorship program with the guy as well. I paid him several hundred dollars a month to learn and to see how he did things. His name's Austin Style, if that matters. But so I really, really enjoy that learning and growing that way. That's probably the funnest thing for me.
So is this your coaching right here?
Rough Nation? Yeah.
Okay. So
need a little bit more active on it, but yeah.
So for those of you who are watching the podcast,
I'm actually full on clients now, so I literally just I got enough clients, so
so you don't want me to advertise it? Okay, nobody.
I mean, they can, but yeah, nobody, I'm definitely not.
Nobody pay attention to this. So it's Tribe Aesthetic. This is your clothing line.
Yeah. So it's building. I want to. What inspires me? I really like the way Dark Sport does their stuff.
Yeah,
especially more so with the athletes, man. It's like they treat them really well, and that's rare to see in with things nowadays. So
you do girl stuff and guy stuff, I see.
Yeah, I have a lot more guy stuff just because guy stuff are easier to, they're just more, it's just more of it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's pretty cool, man. You should be proud. You got a bunch of stuff going on now. You came from humble beginnings to having a bunch of businesses on the go and doing really well for yourself.
Yeah, man, I feel like I'm still learning this. It's trial and error. So, like, speaking with the clothing line, this isn't the first one I've done. Mm-hmm. It's just the first one I've done sort of right.
You're taking your time. You know what, man? I know how that feels. Yeah. Listen, I did – before I started Hostile last February, and I had a clothing line called Abiad's Army.
Okay.
Way back, and then I had one, I don't know, I had a different one. I've always done like t-shirts and shit.
Yeah.
But I've never really like put time and created designs and tried to like put a website up and like really treat it like its own business. It was kind of like a side thing. I'm like, oh, I'm bodybuilding, I'll just have a t-shirt.
You're right. And that's made the biggest difference with it. Yeah.
It's not like that though. You have to really treat it like its own business with its own website and its own like thing. And it looks like you're doing that now. So that's really, really, really good.
Thank you.
So let me ask you one more question. I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but how do you feel about juggling the businesses? Because I think my personal opinion is, for a lot of people listening and a lot of the young guys coming up, the hardest part of our sport is juggling the passion, which is eating and training in the stage, with the business side of things and making sure you can keep all those things in line. So how are you feeling about all of that, you know, new stuff that's on your plate?
It is a challenge, man. I tell you, especially the hardest, the clothing is very difficult trying to keep up with that. Especially because it's new and it's not making a ton of money.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest part. I definitely need to, I'm looking for someone to kind of help me out with that. But it's just a learning thing. So basically with the coaching, I had to learn. That's every single thing's been a learning curve for me. With the coaching, I had to find a way that works for me to coach people. I went through, like, because, you know, back in the day, or people, well, even people now still do it. John still does it. He converses through email.
Yeah.
I was awful at that. So I just do text. I do WhatsApp. So I have WhatsApp.
Okay.
They update me through that. That works great. And it took me a year to figure out that's the way I communicate best. And then on top of that, with the posing, I had everything. So basically with the business, the more I can, like, automate things, the better.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, obviously that's with everything. So I know some people, they do like, oh, DM me. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Go to my website. I took the time out to write everything, every question you may have.
Yeah.
And that type of stuff.
So you have like an FAQs where they can go and just kind of, their questions are already probably answered.
Yeah. So I still get asked the same questions though, you know.
No, nobody wants to read shit, man.
Nah,
they want to talk. They want to talk to you directly. That's how it is. So, go ahead.
The biggest thing was learning how to do, like, was the content stuff. So, like, I still struggle with a lot of it, but I've started treating bodybuilding more as a business. So when it comes to, like, a show, I plan out all my photo shoots around that. Like, I used to be like, oh, I'm going to, you know, after the show, I go eat, I go spend time with the family. But I'm like, now I have to get my photo shoots done. I have to get video content done. I have to do all this stuff. And, like, I kind of feel bad for my mom, because my mom comes to the shows, but I'm like, mom, I got to get this work done, because this is the time to get it done, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's hard for people to understand, because they're like, well, your show's over. How come you can't come for breakfast Sunday morning? Or how come you can't come for dinner? And you're like, I got 4 photo shoots lined up and I got this video series to do. And are you doing any YouTube stuff? Or are you still not really?
I am, but I'm sucking at it right now, to be honest with you. I just got something to help me out with it. I was doing pretty good before the Arnold, but what happened was, my phone dropped my phone and the camera started to suck, and I dropped my video camera and I dropped everything, and I had to send it all off to get fixed. So I fell off quite a bit, and it's also weird, because, like, talking from a business point of view as well, I work with Joe Bennett on his app, so I provide content for him on there. And it's kind of tough to juggle giving him content, but then also giving myself enough content for YouTube, and just trying to figure out. Basically, we kind of figured it out a little bit on what I'm going to provide for him on that, and what I can provide, you know, on my own platforms. But yeah, it's definitely a business trying to looking at John, he does it very, very well.
John's
and
crazy.
People always ask me, this is all such, but people always ask me who my idols are in bodybuilding. And it's not guys, like, you know, it's not guys who have the best physiques or whatever. It's the guys who built something off of bodybuilding, you know?
Yeah.
Who guys who made money and guys
like,
who made,
like who? You know? Like who? Like who?
John Meadows would definitely be one of my top guys in that sense. I like JP. JP, yeah. He's done a really well job. He's not even a pro. And even John before, he was making more than 90% of pros before John turned pro, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, guys like that, Matt Porter, you know, Matt was one of the first guys I saw who had a good amount of money and wasn't a pro as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to his house. He had like $1 million home, and, you know, he had a nice house, but everything else was real, like, low key.
It's funny. Everybody who meets John makes him their mentor.
Yeah.
He has a blueprint for you. Like, he can teach you exactly what you have to do. You just have to do the work.
Yeah.
But it's John, like, you know, John's doing the YouTube thing now. It's almost like everything he does, he just excels at it. Cause now he's doing the YouTube thing. He's doing 5 videos a week. I'm like, I call him. I'm like, John, how are you doing 5 videos a week? I'm like, I can't even think of enough shit to do 5 videos a week.
That's the hardest part. That's definitely the hardest part.
Yeah. Before you go, man, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got other appointments and stuff, but before you go, is there anything you want to promote? I mean, we talked about your website, we talked about your clothing and your coaching. Is there any, even if you don't want to promote something, is there a message you want to kind of portray to people about your story and about what they can expect about bodybuilding and moving forward?
Oh man.
I know it's like a deeper, but you know, I just always like to give people a chance to kind of say what they want to say before they go, kind of thing.
You know, I would say that, you know, granted, there's some older people that follow me, but I got a lot of younger guys who follow me. And, you know, I really identify with where they are in their life and, you know, what they have. And honestly, I think that the biggest thing is, like, you set out a goal, whatever your goal is, if it's to be a pro or whatever, you know, don't lose track of that goal. And I see this all the time with guys. It's going to be hard for a couple of years. I had hardships. It's going to be hard. But you just have to remember that and stay focused, you know. And honestly, you got to say to yourself, is this really that bad? Is, you know, not having the brand new phone really that bad? Is, you know, not going out on Saturday night really the worst thing, you know, in comparison to what your life could be in the future?
Yeah.
And I tell myself now, the way I kind of get through things is like, in 20 years, do I want to look back at myself and say, am I disappointed in myself? Or can I tell myself, well, you did a good job. You know, you're doing a lot better now and everything you did back then paid off.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have any regrets when I'm, you know, 40, 50 years old.
So, yeah. No, I get it. That's a good message, man. All right. I'm going to let you go because I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to keep you forever. And I know we've tried to schedule this thing like 4 times.
I could talk to you all day, man. This is fun.
I know, man. We could, you know what though? I always have people back on and I definitely want to have you back on, dude. You're going to be, I see you as just being a mainstay in the classic division. Hopefully I don't have my own, I have my own personal selfish hopes. And I hope you go on, I hope you go on to put on 30 pounds and fucking crush everybody in the 212.
Oh man, yo, I'm not against it though. I'm not against it whatsoever. Yeah.
Wait, one more question before you go. So you said you had an invite. Do you want to talk about that?
No, I can't. I can't.
Come on, man. Everybody knows what you're talking about already.
No, we all know what you're talking about. No, okay. I just say someone called me to do a show that's later in the year, and
and somebody really famous is promoting it. That's all we're gonna
say. Yeah.
What about the Olympia? Is that on your radar?
Yeah, I'm doing the Olympia.
Did you qualify with the show or no? How does it qualify?
Niagara Falls.
Oh, Niagara Falls qualified you. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know who else is doing that other show. So that's literally all the information I have.
But I just have a question. So is there any more other shows you want to do before the Olympia? Or are you focused on the Olympia right now?
I'm focused on the Olympia. I would have loved to do a show this past weekend, but there was no Classic Physique shows. The closest one was maybe 5 weeks away, and that's not good timing. So business wise, on top of that, one more business thing, guys. If there's any young pros watching or anything, what I end up doing is I booked myself up since there were no shows. I booked myself up with guest closings and seminars, and I got my first taste of doing seminars in 2018 after Toronto. I did a tour of Europe and I did that all myself, planning the trips, my own money for the trips, the hotels, and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
It was worth. I didn't make a ton of money. You know, I made a little bit. Some places did a lot better than others. France was amazing. London didn't do that. I didn't do that well in London though.
Maybe they're more hardcore. Maybe they're more hardcore there. They didn't want like
it,
the.
It could have been. And then it was 2 years ago. So, but. I made a little bit of money, but nothing worth you know. But the thing is, I got to meet a lot of fans. I got to travel, and that was the best part of it, you know.
Yeah, well, honestly, if you look at it on a positive side, you're like, you got to travel the world.
Yeah.
And you made a little bit of money on top of it. Mm-hmm. So why mm-hmm. not, right? So you're doing – so is that your thing now? You're doing more seminars?
I try to do as many as I can, yeah. I have one in Toronto, but it got canceled. I have one in Hawaii, though, so.
No, that's all right.
And, you know, the thing is, man, like, yo, like, I see, like, you can't be afraid of a no. Like, I've been reaching out to people since January about doing events for the rest of the year. And I got a lot of no's, you know. I even got a no from Tim Gardner. For the Mel Chancy show, and then I did the Arnold, and he's like, "Hey man, you think about guest? You gotta change the line." So I was like, "You know, so like, yeah." And I talked. The cool advice I got from Jay Cutler, I met him at his show in Virginia.
Yeah.
And he was like, when he was first getting started on the pro ranks, he did as many guest bowlers as he could, and he didn't charge much of anything. He said he was charging $400.
Yeah.
And for Jay Cutler, that's literally nothing. For Jay Cutler, yo.
Yeah,
even if he was a younger pro, he was still on the covers of magazines. Yeah, he was still a known name, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just took that advice. I'm like, yo, I need to be seen. And I know I do a lot better in person than I do communicating online.
Yeah.
So So that's what I tell every new guy that I talk to pro-wise. I'm like, dude, like just ask. That's what's the worst thing to do is say no.
Yeah. What's your seminar? Because I've always thought about doing seminars, but I usually do Q&A seminars. When you do a seminar, do you have a planned seminar that you're going to talk about and then take questions, or do you just do live Q&A kind of thing?
I've done a couple different ways. So I've done a lot of posing seminars.
Yeah.
And that has to be limited. So like what I do is I have a posing seminar, and then I'll have separate tickets for a Q&A if you want to come listen after that.
Yeah,
because I can only handle myself maybe 20 people at a time, and even that's a challenge.
Yeah,
but I've done that in Hong Kong. I had the privilege of doing a 3-day training and posing seminar. That was
awesome. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and a cool thing, like it was really limited. It was maybe six to eight people tops at that one, just because it was again just me. And I will say this too, like. People overseas, they pay a lot more. Like I had a guy help me out promote that one though, and the amount, like he told me, oh, I charge the people this much money, and I was like, it was several thousand dollars. I'm like, no one would even pay maybe $300 to see $100 is rare in the States.
Yeah. Well, people are spoiled here, man, because they get to see you. Yeah. You know, they got a lot of access to you online, and they get to see you at various shows, and it's like. I think people overseas don't have the access, so they're willing to pay a little bit more to be able to spend some time with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what my friend. I was talking to my friend. She's in the tech world, and she was telling me the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, yo, that was fun. And other seminars I've done, just Q&As too. But yeah. I really like to be able to at least do something else, with the Q&A. You know? Yeah.
I've always been too nervous to do them.
Really?
I don't, because I don't know where to start. Like, there's so many things to talk about. So, like, what am I going to? So, I just do the Q&A thing. I'm like, okay, we'll do a seminar. You can, everybody. But then the problem is when people come, and I'm sure you've had this before, they're scared to start asking questions.
Yeah. So, you just talk.
Yeah, you're like just sitting there, and like nobody's asking questions because they're all scared to sound stupid. And then it's kind of hard to get it going. So,
because I would have been the same way. So what I did was I kind of shadowed people who had seminars already. So there's this woman out in the UK, Emma, and there's another woman in New York named Chula. I watched both of these women hold posing seminars, and they're badass. Like, Emma does just posing full time, and like she kills it in the UK. She has like a nice car, nice house, everything. She has her own studio for posing.
Yeah.
So I did that. So I learned from her. I learned how she runs it, and I kind of changed a couple things, you know, for myself.
Yeah.
And with the training seminar, I was lucky enough to be in Tampa here with Ben Pekowski.
Yeah.
And his muscle MI40 muscle camps. I sat in on maybe 3 or 4 of those and saw how they did things. And I was lucky enough to kind of see how people run stuff and just kind of build on that.
See, I was unlucky enough that the seminar I sat in on was John's. And John's seminar, he's like a fucking scientist. He's got all these slides and shit. It's like an hour long of like just pure science. And I'm like, I can't fucking do this.
Nah.
It's not. When I saw him give his seminar, I'm like, I just don't have that much knowledge. It's a different level. So it kind of even discouraged me even further. I'm like, I can't. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to podcast and let other people tell me about stuff. And it's.
You're right, man. Yeah. It's funny because at the Hong Kong one, dude, like, he wanted me to do some nutrition and supplement stuff. And like after seeing John, I was like, dude, I don't really want to do that.
That's right, because you feel stupid. You're like, even though, like honestly, like, the average pro, even if we don't know the background science behind it, probably knows more than 95% of the average people about nutrition.
Yeah.
But after seeing John talk about it, you're like, I'm not going to do this a service. Like, it's like...
Right.
You know what I mean? You're right, like, man. I'm doing you a disservice by not teaching you the way John taught you. So exactly. Anyway. Okay, Terrence, I'm going to let you go. I hope that you'll come back on after that special show or before that special show and we can discuss it further, because then by then it'll be public news.
Yeah, yeah.
And
last I heard is they're supposed to, like, I don't know. That's all I know. And I don't know who else is competing, but they – last I heard, it was supposed to come out this week. I don't know if it changed because of, you know, the virus or whatnot, but they were supposed to make the announcement this week sometime. So,
all right. Well, I'll have you back on, man. We'll discuss it. I had a great time talking to you, and I really hope that your season goes well the rest of the season. We'll talk again hopefully soon.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
All right, Terrence. Thanks for coming on, dude. We'll talk soon, and I don't know. Keep killing it.
All right.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.